Hey everybody, Harry here. Welcome back to Alston Pudding Presents, the podcast presented by Alston Pudding. We're still in season three. It's chugging along. Season three is sort of going to be just the season that ends when it ends. The show has sort of become, it comes out when it comes out. Every once in a while thing, just because of scheduling stuff and other commitments. But we still love making the show. This week I'll be talking to Kevin Grady from Fracture Type, a band based in Quincy, Mass. Little kind of like post-hardcore band. I've known Kevin for years, like since like high school. And so we just sort of caught up and chatted about music, and it's a really nice talk. But enjoy the episode.
Yeah, so I haven't done this is going to be the first episode in a while.
Really?
Yeah, I've been on mid-season hiatus. I just need everybody, because this is an audio medium, everybody needs to know, anyone who's listening needs to know how many air quotes I put around that.
It's like about 12.
Yeah. So thank you, because we had to reschedule. So thank you for like being patient with my
Oh, no, right back at you.
Because I've been like, I have made the mistake of being really competent at my job, like my main day job, not my Alston Pudding stuff,
Oh, I see. Okay.
which means that they give me more responsibility like
Oh,
every week.
no.
And so it has like the past couple months I've been like just getting home, like I can't talk to a person right now. And
I know what you mean.
plus I've been doing like grad school apps and stuff, and that's finally over, so I can get back to my real passion, which is DIY podcasting.
Nice. That's the spirit.
Hell yeah.
The spirit of DIY.
But how the fuck are you, dude? I haven't seen you in years.
I was gonna, I wanted to start with that. Like, I remember us carpooling to high school on my
Yes.
freshman year.
Yeah, we should
And
maybe mention how we know each other, which you hinted at it right there. We're from the same hometown.
yeah, Marshfield.
And we went to high school briefly for 1 year together.
One
Because
year,
I didn't
yeah.
go to Marshfield High, but then I went to a high school that will not be named on this show. But
Yeah.
you're the do you know
I
Pink
escaped.
Navel,
I escaped
Dev?
it. Yes,
Yeah,
absolutely.
so
We used
they've
to
been
do
on.
longboard together a lot.
Hell yeah, that makes so much sense. They have been on the show, so you're the
Yeah.
second Marshfield guest who's been on the show.
Oh, no way. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dev is fantastic. I've been following
Yeah.
their music career since it started, when they were doing like pop punk emo stuff, and then pivoted to hip hop. I think it was Running Laps was
Yeah.
one of the first names, and then Pink Navel, and it's just been really cool to see.
Yeah. No, they're super funny.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how we know each other. That's why if you're listening and you're like, why are they like, oh, I haven't seen you in years. That's the reason why.
I don't think I've seen you since I was 16 years old.
And yeah, I was probably 17 then, because I think I'm
Yeah,
like a
that is
year.
insane to think about.
Yeah. Yo, what was the name of your band in high school? I've been trying to remember.
In
The
high school.
one, remember we w
There was a couple.
I went with you guys to like a battle of the bands at like the rec
One of the
room in like
churches.
a church in Brant Rock. Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been one of two bands. That was either the Shrugs
Yeah, it
or
was the Shrugs.
it
It was the
was the
Shrugs.
Shrugs.
Yeah.
Wow, that was
I was like, as soon as I hear the name, I'm gonna know.
that was 7th and 8th grade. That was MySpace era, and there was a band from Australia that hit us up. There was a bunch of like 30-something-year-olds who are like, "We're the Shrugs. You can't be the Shrugs." And we're like, "Dude, we've only played in our hometown I don't think we're gonna make it to Australia anytime soon.
You're like a 16-year-old getting cease and desist letters on fucking MySpace.
Exactly. Yeah,
that still would have been
HTML styled and everything.
Hell yeah. I miss MySpace. I talk about this all the time.
It is very surprising how often MySpace comes up.
This is my white whale. Like, I want to return to that format of social
media. Tom did something right, you know? And then he just evaporated, and that's okay.
I actually, this was a post that was going around Twitter today that apparently he's been very active. Like, he's never not been active on like dating apps in whatever, like Bay Area or LA. I don't know where he is.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, yeah, actually, because someone was like, oh, this guy made MySpace and he just disappeared.
Use the same photo.
Yeah, it's the same photo. And then that like a so bunch good. Of women were like, yeah, he definitely didn't disappear.
Well, maybe from tech. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, yeah. From social media web dev.
Right.
But yeah, I miss the because the, I don't know, like everything is so sterilized, like all like so the big platform social media places are so like sterilized and uniform. And mm-hmm. MySpace was like, that was creativity, you know? Plus
customizable.
You're like, we were teenagers using that and like we were HTML coding. Yeah. I didn't even realize it until years later. When someone was like, hey, could you take a look at the, I was like, oh, I don't know coding. And they were like, all right, well, like it's HTML. It's like pretty basic. And I was like, oh, no, wait, this is MySpace. Okay.
Yeah.
It's all coming back to me.
Yes, I did wind up being a software engineer, which is pretty funny.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
We haven't mentioned your current band yet. We should probably do that. So in addition to being a software engineer, you are the singer and are you guitar or bass? I forget.
Baritone. Halfway between the two. A baritone.
No. Like instrument.
Yes, it's a baritone guitar.
It's a baritone guitar. Okay. Mm-hmm. I've never actually seen one of those, I think.
You've probably seen them and maybe didn't know because they look very much like a guitar. Mine's like an inch longer.
Okay.
Or a guitar.
I probably have seen.
Yeah.
It's just not a term that you like really
gets
thrown around that much.
Yeah. I know what you mean. It's kind of funny in the world of say like metal and hardcore punk and things, people often just take a normal guitar and just tune it way down to what would essentially be a baritone guitar range. But there are models of guitar you can buy that are like, this guitar is meant for that. And it's just a little bit longer to compensate for the deeper tuning.
And the name of the band is Fracture Type.
Fracture Type. Yeah. Yes.
So we now that we got that out of the way, we can go back to talking about MySpace, which is the real reason why we're here.
Oh, if Fracture Type had a MySpace, I'm already thinking how would I HTML code that up? What would it look like?
I had a MySpace for the fake band that I never actually like got off the ground.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. It was called Oscar James and Blue Sky. It was it was a blues rock band.
Nice. Was that Marshfield folks or was that
later? No, it was just me and my MySpace.
I like
and how. Like when I was learning how to play guitar, I was like, yeah, I love the blues. I'm like an old blues man. Yeah.
The band name kind of makes it sound like there's a whole group of people there, which is kind of
fun. Yeah, yeah. And I was Oscar James. That was like my pseudonym. But it does, yeah. Well, I was planning, like there would have been a bunch of people. If I had any actual like drive at that age to form a band, but I didn't. I really just wanted to like, when I look back on like learning guitar, a lot of it was just like using a multi-effects pedal and just like doing a lot of like delay looping and then like doing like crazy, like just trying to like do Pink Floyd solos over like,
like bedroom stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't even smoke weed then yet.
Why? No, I'm just kidding. Neither did I.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
It makes sense why I did later.
Yeah.
Also makes sense why in like college I was like trying to get the band I was playing in was like shoegaze.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Big pedal boards and
yeah.
We have big pedal boards too. And a lot of people throw us into shoegaze, which is very funny because you see us live and we're very fast and aggressive and we'll just kind of throw the shoegaze label on there. It's like, okay, I mean, I get it because we do have like pedal boards, but would you know that?
There's more to it than that. Yeah.
See the show.
Yeah. I didn't think that at all when I listened to you.
Think what? About shoegaze?
That you were shoegaze. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I get it, but it'd be a strange way to say like that's the leading genre, I suppose.
No, for sure. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of like shoegaze crossover now between like other genres, especially like faster and like heavier genres.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think that's inevitable with modern guitar music, or really any music. It's like everything's a hybrid of things at this point. Which is fun.
Yeah.
I enjoy it.
Which is sort of like has always been the case. But right. I feel like it's in a much more like saturated way. Like every genre is built upon a previous genre, but like now I think people are getting a little wild with their like trying to just throw anything together. We got shoegaze, we got emo, we've got trap. What do you want? And like we'll put it in there. We don't care. Whatever's gonna make streams happen.
Yeah. That's something that I sometimes feel guilty of, maybe, is like not refining Fracture Type down into a more specific something, be it genre. Where I'm not really sure what the motivator is there, but I can never get myself to be like, we're not gonna do this certain thing, even though I like it. It's kind of just like a big catch-all for every type of guitar music that I like.
Mm.
Yeah, like listening to, not playing. I think there's a difference there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know a lot of people who like don't even really listen to a lot of the kind of music that they make. Not that they don't like it. It's just that like obviously that influenced them enough at some point where they make that kind of music. But then like outside of that, they're more curious about, you know, probably genres that they have like less of a foot in the trenches of, you know,
because they're probably exploring, you know.
Yeah.
As listeners do. Yeah.
And that, like, if you're listening to only exclusively one genre and trying to make that one genre too, I feel like that
it's a little much.
It's like kind of limiting because, like, you're only hearing music that sounds like the other music you listen to and make, and you're not really like getting, like, listening to other kinds of music is an amazing way to get ideas and inspiration.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's like putting all your eggs in one basket in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, I know listening to Fracture Type, I listened to the new EP a bunch here. Let me get the,
cool.
Do you want to say the name? I have it written down, but I'll have to.
Make your brain a better place to live.
Yes. Thank you. And I was listening to, the album, that you put out in what, 2022? Pickaxe
was, I feel like it was it then? Yeah, that sounds about right.
The release date on Apple Music is May 2022.
That's it then. Not great with dates.
And so like I noticed, I mean, this is kind of like a staple of like you guys kind of like you fall into like kind of the post hardcore realm. You're listed as a metal artist on Apple Music.
Cool. That's funny. I get it.
The first album, I think it was a little more in that direction, but then the EP, I think, is like very solidly The EP is listed as alternative.
Interesting. I don't know. Well, we did switch distributors between the two, so maybe that has something to do with it. I'm not really sure how the genre tags even show up, or if we even select them. The drummer in the band does the distribution end of things, so I don't have a lot of details on that, but it's always kind of fun. I just remember, like, way back in the day, like, downloading, like, Primus MP3s off of, like, LimeWire, and it'll be, like, metal. I'm like, Primus is a metal band? Maybe, I guess.
But yeah. We only have,
like, four genres to pick from because it's, like, that broad. I kind of get it.
They're, you know, like, I think looking back, like, I think of Primus primarily as a like a funk band with like hard rock elements.
Yeah, but like, I know what you mean? Yeah,
I mean, at the time they were coming out, yeah, that probably like upon listening was probably like, oh, that's metal with like heavy funk influences.
But it's weird. Yeah. I mean, they're certainly heavier back in the day as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about like crazy genre mishmashes, like. They have like the loudness of metal.
Mm-hmm.
They got like the grooves and like bass lines of funk, but also like this played at the speed of metal. And then
they don't have the aesthetic as of metal. Like
when
you do a show, it's not like roar and dark and
yeah,
like strobe lights. Maybe there's some strobe-y type stuff, but you know what I mean. Like that kind of the visual aspect of it. It's more like gnomes and astronauts and stuff.
Yeah. And well, and Les Claypool's voice too is like, I feel like he's like influenced
bluegrassy
by
or something?
Bluegrass is what I was gonna say. He's got like a bluegrass twang. If anyone, if you're listening and you don't know who Primus is, they did the South Park theme song.
Yeah.
And the South Park theme song sounds a lot like the rest of their music too. Like it's a pretty strong example, I think.
Yeah. They also did a bunch of songs on Tony Hawk Pro Skater's soundtracks.
Classic soundtracks.
You know, anyone in our age range has been influenced by, I feel.
Probably some of the best video game soundtracks out there.
Yeah. And it just exposed so much music to such a huge audience that otherwise probably wouldn't have.
And had pretty good like mixed genres too. Like they were throwing hip hop songs on there as well as like.
And that was also like, that was just after like new metal era, where it was kind of already the combo of those things, like metal and hip hop. So there's all that stuff was on there too. It's pretty funny. All over the place.
What was I just gonna say about time? This is the first time I ever heard Judas Priest. Because Ace of Spades was on Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2. And I was like, man, this song sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't listen to a lot of classic metal. I don't even really consider myself like a metalhead. I listen to very few metal bands even, but I love heavy music.
Same. I'm kind of in the same boat.
Yeah. I tend towards like hardcore punk, I suppose, when it comes to like extreme heavy guitar music.
I'm like, the past couple years I've been branching out into more metal. I definitely am not adept enough with the vocabulary, because metal is one of those genres, like umbrella genres, that has like a bunch of subgenres, and like, you know, like this endless. this metal band isn't the same kind of metal as this metal band. So like I can't listen to a metal band and be like, oh yeah, this is death metal versus this is black metal versus this is like, I can tell you what's hair metal. But yeah. That's easy.
I live with other musicians who have been in various metal bands, and they put it all the time, so I have a really good respect and pretty good understanding of a lot of the genre breakdowns at this point. And yeah, it's fun. There's usually no big arguments because it's not the internet. It's just roommates.
Yeah. Well, I go to a lot of like electronic shows and events, and that
has performing.
I DJ, well, right? Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Somewhat. I DJ like once a fiscal quarter.
Cool.
just for tax purposes.
wait, what?
No, that's a joke.
Yeah, it's like, wait, you write this off somehow? Wait, tell me about that.
Here's a self plug. I'll be doing Porch Fest, Somerville Porch Fest on May 11th.
If you nice. Want to
swing through, anyone listening can swing through. I'll be posting the address on like social media and shit.
Yeah.
But like electronic has a similar like thing going on where there's a bunch of micro genres that like, and there's like snobs online or even at shows that you'll go to who will be like, if you call this techno, like this happened in the car. I was in the car with my mom a couple weeks ago and I was playing a drum and bass compilation and she said, is this techno? And I just sighed and I was like, no,
come on.
But like, not cause I wanted to be a snob, but I was like, I heard every electronic. I was just like, it's not, but like, that doesn't matter to you. I was just like, don't worry about it, mom. Like,
yeah, exactly. Because I mean, electronic is probably the most vague way to describe music imaginable. It's not even describing how it sounds at all. All it's doing is describing that, oh yeah, there's like electricity is involved.
Yeah.
Or like a computer.
Do you remember when Dylan went electronic?
No, but I've heard that statement before.
Well, it's Dylan went electric because he started playing electric guitars.
Sorry, that joke was over my head.
Sorry.
But yes, that was Newport Folk Festival, right?
Yeah. It would be funny if he came out at Newport Folk Fest in like 1965 or whatever the year was. I think it was 65. It doesn't
matter. Like a synth or something.
Yeah, with like CDJs and just start booms, 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 and then doing his like singing over that.
Wow.
There's a
genre crossover we need.
I'm about to once we're done here, I might open Ableton and do like a Rolling Stone deep house edit.
Well, at this point, if you can think of it, someone's done it. So you gotta go find it first.
There's like a SoundCloud account that specializes in like classic rock house remixes.
Wow.
And like some of them are pretty good, but I'm also like, I kind of just hate the concept in general.
I know what you mean.
They're better because it's kind of a meme. Well, I feel like it's worse now because I don't blame this artist for like making them in the first place, but I feel like it spawned something that I don't appreciate, which is like, because at least that person was making remixes of using the original song. And so like when he does like a Led Zeppelin remix, it's like you hear Robert Plant's vocals and you hear like a sample of Jimmy Page's guitar.
Sure. Yeah.
But now there's a friggin' trend that I've been hearing so much lately and it's driving me insane, but they're modern covers, but just in like, an EDM style.
I see.
Of like, what was the last one? There's one of like Losing My Religion, REM, that's been going around. That is, I'm just like, stop. Like it's those like really breathy vocals that are like super non-committal and vague and just like.
There's a term for that now that I don't remember. I'll have to look that up. I'll send it to you when I find it. But I heard the term.
Yeah, but you
that.
Can hear you
that voice. Yeah.
Like you know what I'm talking about.
I do. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and those I've heard a bunch of those. Like, I was in like a hotel bar a couple months ago, and the playlist they were playing was like exclusively that.
Oh,
and I was like, this is awful.
What's the appeal? Because I feel like it would turn off both the fans of the classic rock and the fan, like someone who's into electronic music.
So the thing I've realized is that a lot of people, it's less common to be like, to have standards of your music to in terms of your music taste than people who let me go back and phrase this in a sensible way. We have like standards for like the music we listen to, right? Like, I know what I like. I know what sounds good. There's music I hear a lot, and a lot of it's like highly mainstream stuff. There's plenty of pop music that I like and enjoy, but then there's also stuff that sounds really lazily produced, like least common denominator shit. I genuinely don't understand how it is popular, but it is.
I think it's like an ease of access type thing.
Yeah, it's ease of access. And I think on the top down level, it's like a marketing thing where they're
absolutely.
We know it, like
they're trying to make it as easy to access as possible.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said about tried and true chord progressions just getting stuck in your head and just quote unquote working whenever you're working.
It's true.
You know?
I don't care as much about the what chords you're using. I want the textures of like the production to sound cool.
I agree.
So like when I hear
to that heavily,
when I hear shitty hi-hats, it annoys me. And, and I'm like hearing this on like a hugely charting song. I'm trying to not name any names in particular. There's no one specifically in my mind, but like I'm taking all top 40 shit to task right now. But the reason it's like people are listening to that. Like a lot of people are listening to that.
An insane amount of people.
It's wild how mid so many people's music taste is.
Yeah.
And I don't even have the heart to like tell them it.
There's no reason to. You know, just kind of do your own thing.
When I hear people geeking out about whatever new big top 40 Spotify, like every Spotify playlist album that's just come out, I'm like I listen to them so I can like, because I'm a music critic, because I there's a part of me that needs to engage.
Yeah, oh totally. And a lot of that is often just for a catchy kind of background sound, right?
Yeah,
earworms and whatnot.
Yeah.
I liked what you said about caring more, maybe not more, but caring a lot about sound design versus like what chords are being used. And I think that's something that Fracture Type often cares about as well. And just me in general. And maybe that has something to do with why we're related to shoegaze pretty frequently, is because that is very much a shoegaze thing. You listen to a shoegaze song as maybe like two or three, maybe four chords if you're lucky in the whole song, because it's not about that.
And unless you have like super good like pitch understanding, like just in your ear, like if you have like perfect pitch, it's hard to tell what chords those even are.
Because I know, like, yeah, that's also true.
They're so
I love obscuring chords, maybe with effects and whatnot, but also just like removing notes from the chord or putting them in a different order or spreading the notes across instruments. Even like if I play one note, the other guitarist plays one note and the bassist plays one note together, that's one chord.
Yeah,
but individually you don't really hear it as that. It's something I kind of stole from Queens of the Stone Age. I watched I forget what the YouTube channel is, but he's a guy who I think it's called like Guitar Tricks or something like that. This is a really cool host, and he just like gets pretty big guitarists to get on there and be like, show us your chops. Like, what do you do? What inspires you? And one of his, the Queens of Stone Age guitarist, I forget his name, he came on there and he was like, oh yeah. I mean, I usually take something that's very simple, just big bar chords, and then I just remove almost all of the notes and I only use a couple of them. And then it sounds better. Mm. And it was a very cool, like reductionist kind of way of going about that. And that really stuck with me.
Yeah. Well, especially with like a lot of like effects.
Yeah.
Like something like a bar chord, like unless it's like the more distortion you have, like the harder it is to like hear the individual, which is why a lot of heavy music relies on like power chords. Cause that's like a,
right.
that in itself I almost like when you were just saying that, I was like, so he invented power chords.
No, I mean,
that's I'm sure what he's doing is different, but yeah,
I know what you mean.
That's the same like principle, is that like we're just playing like the bottom, like the lowest notes of what would be a bar chord, and just kind of removing like we're removing like the major or minor element.
Yeah. So he would often keep the major minor element and remove like the fifth and maybe even the root. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's interesting. And so, cause like a power chord is like the first and the fifth.
Yep.
And so like that's really cool.
Yeah, it's neat.
I love their music. So I actually didn't know that. So I'm going to like go back.
You'll start to notice it a bit. I mean, obviously there's a million power chords throughout all their songs and music, but when he gets a little bit more riffy, you can kind of hear that sometimes where like I can imagine some of those riffs being played where if it was just like a full bar chord, it would just sound very vanilla, but it doesn't. Mm-hmm. He uses less notes. He also uses a lot of fuzz effects, which like you said, when you add a lot of distortion like that, sometimes when you just play two notes, it has this funny like beating to
is
it, like,
is it Troy Van Leeuwen? Is he the guitarist?
Yeah, I think he's like the lead guitar, but I'm talking about like Josh
Holm.
Yes,
the main guy. Okay.
Yeah, he was the one on the YouTube that I saw.
Yeah, not a great person, but I do love Queens of the Stone Age.
Yeah, I'm not trying to like be like this dude's amazing or anything, but I thought that one line was pretty interesting.
I think there's a point where I'm like, I've been a fan of this band for years and I'm not going to not enjoy their music, but like,
yeah,
I know you know, yeah, I don't love you as a person based on everything I'm hearing.
Of course.
What I was going to say earlier is, about Fracture Types music, especially the EP. Mm-hmm. Is that there's I forget, there was a reason why I was bringing it up, but there's a lot of like really cool, and this is a staple of like other post-hardcore music that I've listened to, is that there's a lot of like interesting like rhythmic stuff going on. There's a lot of like interesting like tempo changes, like whether they're abrupt or built to, I think there's a good dynamic there where you're like, oh, here's a sudden one, but like, we're going to like, but on a different part of this song or on another song, we're going to build to this tempo change. And there's a lot of interesting like polyrhythms too.
Especially
you mentioned, I meant to do this at the top.
That's okay.
But who else is in the band with you? Do you want to introduce the band members who are not here?
Sure, they're not here with me right now, but I sure will. So longest running member is Jeff Pizzoni. He plays drums. Him and I have been in like 6+ bands at this point.
Okay. Together?
Together, yes.
Okay, yeah.
We met freshman year of college. He lived across from a buddy I knew from high school. We have Talon Record, who's on bass. Also met in college era. He didn't go to, I went to UMass Amherst. He didn't go there, but he lived out in Western Mass for a bit, and I met him through the music scene there. And then we have Jeff Fisher. So we have two Jeffs in the band. Jeff Fisher's the G off of the Jeffs.
This is, all right, not to interrupt, ahead. But like, shout out to my friend Jeff and his band's Doom Lover and the Cheerful Desolation Choir, because they're he's in one of his bands is another double Jeff situation.
Oh, really?
Has the same distinction of being a there's a JEFF and a GEOFF.
Yeah.
Please,
so we
continue.
Go by last names. That's all right. So Fisher, we call Fish.
I probably
was a former band member's coworker, who then became my roommate, and then he moved out of my house and joined my band pretty soon after each other. So yeah, just a good crew at this point. We've had the same lineup for a couple of years. Former guitarist left because he's becoming a doctor and doing things like that. It's like, all right, dude, that's, go ahead. Sounds great.
That's cute, I guess.
Yeah. Tony, he has since, he's a Marshfield buddy.
Oh, cool.
He has since come back to my house and played some shows at my house with old bands. It was great. It was a big old nostalgia blast.
That's awesome.
It's a four piece fresher type.
Shout out to drummer Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
Because his playing especially stood out to me when I was listening.
Oh, he's incredible.
Yeah.
So what's really funny is I met him, I think we were both like 18, 19, and he had like a John Bonham like tattoo on his shoulder. And it was very much that style of drumming, and we made something. Well, our first band was we were really into like the Mars Volta, but we weren't nearly that good at our instruments.
I mean, the Mars Volta is sick.
They're insane. And this is like peak Mars Volta era. And so we were just like inspired to just make very wacky stuff, which you probably still hear a little bit of when we do like time, complex time and rhythm things in Fractured Type. We really enjoy that. But he... We did many bands since then, but on the side he was doing reggae, and he's a phenomenal reggae drummer.
Oh, hell yeah. You can
also kind of hear through Fracture Type's music occasionally. And I'm usually the one to be like, all right, dude, you gotta learn how to play a D beat and like a blast beat, and like you gotta like a breakdown and like do all this stuff. And since he already knew how to hit a drum really well, it translated amazingly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean he'll be the first to admit he's like not like doing insanely fast double bass stuff, but the band doesn't really call for that anyway.
So we
just go for, it's a really fun dynamic. He is like an insanely good pocket drummer with a very very interested in trying new things and mm-hmm. just trying to push himself.
I mean
it's hard to find a good drummer, and there's a reason I've been playing music with him for over 10 years now.
Yeah. That kind of tracks though, because like one of my favorite drummers is like Stuart Copeland from The Police.
Me too.
He refused to do like a basic rock beat.
Yeah.
And it was like, I mean, that's a band that's like fraught with their like interpersonal like hatred of each other.
Sure.
I think Synchronicity, they had to record in separate rooms because they just couldn't stand to be in the same room as each other.
That's but
like
wild he, to think about.
He refused to do, and like because he wanted to like, he was like, it's not interesting to me to just do like a boom tss, boom boom tss.
Right. It's funny you mentioned that, because that's also what people say about like Lars Ulrich of Metallica.
Mm-hmm.
He would refuse to do a simple beat, and it actually like hurt the band. Whereas with The Police, it helped the band, I think.
Yeah.
With the same perspective, but just applied in much different ways.
And I think that's like what, like when you get to a point where you're like listening to music, like critically, not so much to critique, but just like, like what is going on in this song? Like I don't just want to hear the song. I want to listen specifically to like individual parts of the song.
Yeah, and really like, tuning in.
Yeah, and when you like, if you go listen to The Police, it like you start to hear his hi-hats, and you're like, yo, what the like, what is that he's doing? And
a lot of little. I feel like, I'm not really sure, but it sounds like he had a bunch of like little symbols or like extra, couple extra things here and there.
He's got a YouTube series that's really, really cool. I don't know if he still actively does it,
right?
But like his drum set is crazy. Drum set is wicked. My favorite, cool. Yeah, check out the episode that he has Ginger Baker from Cream on.
Oh, wow.
because they do a like a two-person drum solo. Like they each have a drum kit set up and they're doing like going back and forth on this solo. And it's like,
it's nuts.
It's one of the best drum solo because you have like two of the best drummers ever, like going off, like just kind of like playing off each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then like, yeah.
Unique.
It's wild. But yeah.
That's cool.
Shout out to Stuart Copeland.
Yeah.
And shout out to Jeff of Fracture Type.
His other band that he's currently in is called Long Arm Rex. They're a reggae band, kind of reggae fusion.
Mm-hmm.
They play around here. I think they
do. And that's why I thought of Stuart Copeland, because like the Police have that like reggae influence.
Yeah. 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 And I don't think anyone would ever say, like, yeah, Fracture Type, they're like a reggae fusion hardcore band, right? Like,
that's what you should next album or EP, that's what you should have the tag, the genre tags be on streaming services, is like reggae fusion.
But there's certainly certain parts where he'll just play a beat that no other like post hardcore band is playing.
Yeah.
And maybe not no other, but it's like, you know what I mean? Just like, wait, that fits so well. Where did you come up with that? It's like, I don't know. It's kind of like based off this reggae groove I do. I'm like, cool, man. Keep it up.
Well, that's what, like, cause when you start to break, like playing down to a, like an abstract level like that, mm-hmm. then it's like, you're extract like what he did was like extract a groove from a different type of music and applied it to the type of music that you're playing. And yeah. So like that, like once you can do that and not like think so much, so consciously of like, I want to play this post-hardcore song with like a reggae beat. Like once you realize that it's all just like groove and rhythm and those things can be like altered and adjusted and reapplied, then
I agree 100%.
You know, I think that's a much more surefire and successful way of doing like
absolutely
genre crossover thing, than just being like, I want to make shoegaze trap just because I like those two genres,
right?
Like you kind of have
a little too on the nose that way.
Yeah, you got to sort of piece it apart.
Yeah.
I don't know. Work if you're listening to this and you disagree, then work however you feel. Best for you.
Yeah. So I know that even the term DJ kind of means a lot of things these days. How do you approach DJing, like when you're performing or not? Do you like go and like make beats, or you just have like the two turntables and flip between them? Or
I'm mostly because I mean the technology has changed too, so it's like I don't know, I can't do like vinyl. I've just mostly because I haven't really like ever practiced doing vinyl.
Right. Sounds difficult and expensive.
It is. Yeah. And you also have to be able to, you really have to develop your, like sense of tempo.
Sure.
And being able to like, be like, yeah, all right, this is 125 BPM. I know it's 125 BPM because I can hear that.
That's tricky.
That's so fucking tricky. I can't say which is more difficult, but I think it's like, I'd be interested to hear a debate over which is harder, like having perfect tempo or having perfect pitch.
Ew.
I would really love to hear like some lifelong, like classically trained musicians, like get into
in a way. They're the same, because if a tempo goes fast enough, becomes a pitch.
That's true, and which I know from DJing, because if I try to, you know, sometimes I'll adjust the tempo of a track. Like I do it all digitally. I work with like a couple tracks and like play the song, and then like, you know, take out elements of song A and then bring in elements of song B, and so you sort of make a collage. What I really why I got into That's it fun. Was like. You know, I listen to music all the time, and this was sort of like, what if listening to music was a fun game too?
Gamify it.
Yeah.
Solid strategy.
Yeah.
Like and anything that's, in life, really.
Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, that's how you enjoy doing things. Like, just like you make it fun for yourself. Like,
I remember there's some like phone app that came out a long time ago. I heard about, I never used, but it was like Life RPG or something silly like that. And like,
oh, I heard about this too.
I don't know if that's actually what it was called, but I guess
no. But the concept,
like,
yeah,
you just level up yourself in life,
yeah,
just by like, oh, you read a book, yeah, that's like 45 experience points.
I mean,
silly stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's how life works, actually. When
and it's almost like RPGs are modeled after something.
Yeah. It's every time I have to complete a task, there's like 500 subtasks that I have to complete in order to like get back. It's like, you know, like you go to the castle and they're like, oh, I can't give you this special crystal because... like, oh, because this evil thing is plaguing the king has sent you off on
and you need the right basket to hold the crystal in, you know.
I love RPGs so much. But then also like RPGs, instead of just doing the things that I should be doing, you know, the main quest, I do a bunch of fucking side quests all the time.
Oh yeah, I mean you gotta strike a balance there.
Which is kind of how I play RPGs. Like, as soon as I'm done with whatever intro gets you into the game, I'm just like, wherever they told me I'm supposed to go, I'm going to go a different way. And I'm going to go, like, I'm going to explore a bunch.
If as soon as you're done with the main quest, it's like, oh, well, all the exciting stuff's, like, the main driving force is over. Yeah. I want to do all, like, the exploratory things first, and then do the main thing, and then the game's over. Because I feel like a lot of the times it's like if you beat the game, quote unquote, on the main quest, it's like, I don't really feel like doing the side stuff anymore. But if you save that to the end, then you just have infinite side stuff to do first. That's kind of always how I've operated.
Yeah. I pretty much always save the main quest for last.
Mm.
Also because like a lot of the way like leveling up is designed in RPGs now, it's... like the world levels up with you.
Yeah.
So it's like, so if I save the main quest for last, it's going to be the hardest thing.
Yeah.
Theoretically.
Yeah. Like I remember,
well, sometimes you get like too OP. Scrolls. Yeah.
Yeah.
With Skyrim specifically, by the time I got to Alduin, like the final dragon, I crushed him. Like it took no time at all. And I was like, well, my last Skyrim story, like I've played Skyrim so much. I've bought it four separate occasions for different systems.
Yeah.
The last time I played it was in 2021, March of 2021. Like pandemic sounds was still right in full swing. I played it for like an entire month straight.
Wow. So that was your quarantine?
Yeah, I left the room to like get food and go to the bathroom and like occasionally sleep.
Wow.
I ran out of shit to do in Skyrim.
Wow. That was right when I picked up Magic the Gathering.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Actually,
that's basically Skyrim but cards.
I do not play Magic the Gathering, but I have Magic cards right here.
What? Just in your hand?
Yeah, they were sitting next to me on my desk.
What you got?
There's a great story that I can connect this pack of Magic cards to Post Malone.
Wow. Okay. Well, Post Malone is huge into Magic. He's one of the
biggest.
All right, but go ahead.
So I was visiting my friend in New Haven a couple months ago. She's super smart. She's doing a master's program at Yale.
Cool.
I don't know if you've heard of it, but
I think so.
Yeah, no. Shout out Karen, love you. There's a little comic book store in New Haven called Multiverse Comics. It's a great name for a comic store, but like very small. It's like smaller than the room I'm in now. It couldn't be more than like 100 square feet.
Wow.
I love comic book stores, even though I don't buy comics that much anymore.
Yeah, I don't own a single comic, but I like the vibe.
Yeah, and so I always go into a comic book store, but I feel bad because I'm not like they're always small. Like there's no huge comic book store that's like, it's not like a hyper lucrative business, you know.
Right.
Like, these are all like small independent local businesses. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which adds to the charm.
And so at this one, I bought a pack of Magic cards because they're the Lord of the Rings line of Magic cards, and I fucking love Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings is great, and that was their most successful set, I believe, that Magic ever came out with, because of people like you who are like, wait, I can get this cool Lord of the Rings memorabilia in a pack where it's like feels like you're gambling and you're opening this thing, and maybe it reminds you of Pokemon when you're a little kid, just that idea of opening the pack, but it's like a franchise that.
Brief aside, the greatest moment of my life came way too early because it was my first pack of Pokemon cards. I opened it, and the last card in the pack was a holographic Charizard, and this was back in the day. No. I don't.
Oh God.
I what lost
have you
it.
Done? What have you done?
When I was a child, that was the worst day of my life.
So the best and worst day of your life are like very close together. And
yeah, not the same day, but my big That's claim, because holographic Charizard in the original, that was the card to get. The amount of money that would be worth right now. I don't want to think about how much money I can make.
I won't tell you.
It sucks that card is gone. And
my roommate's in the same boat. I think he said he sold it for like a bag of weed or something in high school.
I couldn't believe it, because I at the time I knew that was the card to get, and I hadn't gotten Pokemon cards yet. I opened my first pack and it's right there. Wow. Anyway, like this isn't about Pokemon, this is about Magic and Post Malone.
Oh, yeah, you're telling the whole story. Go ahead.
I took these magic, I got the Magic cards from the store.
Yep. Yeah.
Because of my small business guilt.
Yep.
and I went to a bar later with my friend and met some of her friends. Mm-hmm. And this guy, one of her friends I met, like I was showing them to him. And because he was talking about Magic.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I got the Lord of the Rings ones. And he was like, so he was telling me, because there is, quite appropriately, there is a One Ring card.
There is, yeah.
And there's one of the One Ring.
Mm-hmm.
And can you guess who owns the One Ring?
Oh, yeah. It was the highest valued card purchase in the history of Magic.
It was
insane. Yeah, Post Malone, yeah.
But purchased by Post Malone.
Yeah.
And the way I found this out is because this my friend's friend told me that he's like from Utah or something.
Mm-hmm.
The guy, his friend who like owns a comic store like his friend from home is Post Malone's personal Magic card procurer.
What?
Yeah. And Post Malone has paid this guy, this friend of a friend of my friend,
has
paid this man to like go on Post Malone's private jet and like fly to like Amsterdam, I think, which is where, and he was like, you have to get me these Magic cards.
That's
like
nuts.
That are worth a shitload of money. Here's the money to buy them. And he sent this guy to go purchase the One Ring.
Yeah.
And as much as I hate stories of like rich people's frivolity, it's like I hate the idea of a private jet, but like, you know, that is the kind of like rich, eccentric rich person bullshit that I know I would get into.
Yeah.
Where it's like I'm just paying for my hobbies.
Of
course I'm gonna like
the story about I think it's Nicolas Cage who like owns like multiple castles in Europe or something.
He
can't help himself. Castles. He's like, I can afford that castle. Buy a castle.
But yeah, shit. I got a fucking Shadowfax card.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, it's a good one.
I got
gives all your horses haste, I think.
Yeah.
But there's like
it does. Horses you control have haste.
Yeah. I played that set a lot.
Hell yeah.
It was really fun.
I played Magic in like middle school. Because
I didn't touch it until 2020.
My Magic playing time was very brief, but I do remember my favorite Magic card ever.
Really? What is it?
It was called Stone Tongue Basilisk.
Cool.
Yeah. This card great was names. Yeah. The artwork was cool.
And that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the artwork and then the just like the little descriptions, like the little
flavor text there. Yeah.
Yeah, so cool. That was always my favorite part.
Yeah. My roommate is in a band that a lot of their song titles will be named after Magic cards.
Yeah, that's sick.
And things. It happens all the time, apparently. In the metal world, it's something about the high fantasy like jargon and like the words just has like that, you know what I mean, like larger than life kind of fantasy kind of vibe to it that a lot of metal tends to have.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool.
Speaking of band names and song titles, I guess that's a good segue because one of the few questions I did kind of want to raise is so you're a band that does one of my favorite things, which is you have on the album Pickaxe, you have a song that is your band name. You have a song Fracture Type.
Yes.
And so this like, so why is that song called Fracture Type and not other song? Like what about that is like, this is the band's.
Yeah, that's a really funny story.
Self-titled song, yeah.
The truth is that the song title predates the band title.
Yeah?
So we named our band after that song.
After this, okay.
We used to be called Fault Mine, but it was hard for people to remember that, and people would think it meant, like, my fault, or like a play on words that it wasn't supposed to be, and we just kind of got kind of tired of the name and was like, wait, what about like Fracture Type's actually a really cool band name, even though it's one of our songs. And we're like, yeah, it's great. It's collectively our least favorite song that we have. So it's our least favorite song.
It's probably like a pretty early track then.
It is. It's just really funny that it's like, no, we didn't name this song the name of our band because it's like this song encompasses us in some way. It was the opposite. Oh, and it's our least favorite song. So it's just kind of funny. It's almost like a red herring.
Nice. All right.
We did a music video for that one too. That I don't know. Maybe it's just very simple. And we like to mix things up, and there wasn't a whole lot of mix up in that. We've always.
But you like the combo of words in the title enough to like adopt.
The title
that.
Is great. The title's the best part of the song. But we've always considered, like, songs are never done. Even when they're recorded, they're kind of just like where they were at that point in time.
Yeah.
So if you hear us play some of our older songs, they sound different now.
Mm-hmm.
They're a different tempo. Sometimes we've like completely rewritten certain parts. Because I don't know, we're bored of them and we're not like a big enough band where anyone's going to be like a bunch of people are going to be like upset that the song doesn't sound like it did on their cassette tape when they were a kid or whatever. Like, so I don't know.
Even if they do notice that it sounds different, I feel like real fans like appreciate that.
They do at this point in our careers. Yeah. You know, if we were like wildly popular, we'd have a lot of haters or whatever for something like that, I'm sure.
I've definitely been to shows
really
where
I'm sure it's out there. Like people will like remix their songs, sure. Or like I guess I've noticing this a little bit recently where like a band will come out with a record and then they'll come out with a whole nother record that's all the same songs but like different somehow.
Yeah.
Like right after. But that's like with a lot more intent and being like, all right, we're writing an alternate version of this and writing the song, not simultaneously, but like one right after another, where I'm just kind of talking about like
the songs evolve for you.
You're the like, songs you're, kind of evolve even after they've been recorded. We can still be like, you know, it'd be really cool. What if we did this at this spot?
Yeah.
And it's not kind of like, oh, well, we already recorded it. So I guess so what?
Yeah.
Well, we'll add something into the live.
You still got to play it. Like you're still rehearsing them and like, you
yeah. Really work out. Songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fun.
No, that's awesome. I do. At least when I've noticed that, when I've seen bands that play a version live, that's different than like the one I'm familiar with. I always appreciate it. And it doesn't necessarily matter to me that like whether or not I like the newer version more or less. Because I'm like, it was cool to like witness that live.
Right, because you're there.
I can just leave the show and go listen to the original one I'm thinking of.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Good point.
Yeah. The other question, because we're coming up on an hour, which maybe work towards wrapping, is I want to know how you take care of your voice and throat, like after singing, because one of the trademarks of like your music as well as like post-hardcore as a style is there's like a lot of like half screaming vocals at times, which can be particularly arduous on the throat. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and that, you know, heavy music, whether it's like post-hardcore, punk, metal, like that, like there is a lot of like loudness in the throat. Like even if I don't like the particular music, I always like really admire people who are doing like scream vocals or even half scream vocals.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it like it takes a lot of training, and like I can make like I can do that like like for a little bit, but like even that, like I can feel it in my throat. I don't smoke cigarettes anymore, but like over a decade of doing that, you know.
that'll do something.
So how do you take care of your throat?
Being extremely well hydrated, but not just water, like honestly having something that is like thick and will coat your vocal cords. I think the classic is honey, and it's kind of a joke, but it's actually true that like milk and like dairy products will help have this like layer on your throat. It goes away pretty quickly, but it does help. Overall,
that's interesting because I used to do like a lot of theater, and we were told not to have dairy products before because it builds up phlegm.
Yeah, yeah, but we want the phlegm. It's almost like a protective layer.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the opposite because we don't care about singing very well, quote unquote. Like, there's always going to be like not always, but there's often a lot of grit and whatnot. And whatnot. But overall, I think the biggest thing for me is not letting myself be too like going all out. I have to restrain myself as much as possible when I'm playing live to have like the full duration of the set. I've never had any sort of vocal damage or anything like that, but I can always talk just fine after a show, but I'd probably be like, I don't want to scream anymore. So because when I was first starting, like the screaming is very much like a primal thing. You're just like, everybody can scream, but how long can you do it? Right.
Yeah.
So
how long and how often?
Right. So part of fracture type is like, we're not always screaming for a couple of reasons. One, we would have to play a 10-minute set. Two, it's more dynamically interesting to me to have screams and not screams.
Yeah.
And it just adds that we can play a longer set because of it. I'm not trained. I've never taken a vocal lesson. I've taken plenty of like instrument lessons and have an understanding of music theory, but like the whole biology of a voice and whatnot is very complex, and it's all flesh. It's not like, oh, I'll just like, you know, I'll just take my guitar to the shop and put a new set of strings on it, you know. You're not going to go get new vocal cords. So you do have to really treat it. The biggest part was definitely being like, I have to restrain myself. I have to make the same noise with less volume and less air. Recording is different. You can just go like insane on a record because you can take breaks. And because we do a lot of the recording in-house at my house at the studio. So we're not like sitting there like on the clock, like, you know, paying an engineer, paying for a studio room.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think of when, like, the first thing that comes to mind when I think of like screaming vocals and like, you know, the protection of like the vocal cords is what's the guy from Slipknot?
I don't remember.
Something like he's got like a hyphenated last name, but it's the same. It's like Taylor, right?
Corey Taylor. Yeah.
So after their like second album, like he doesn't scream as intensely, and like they started kind of adding more dynamic because after I think Iowa is their second album, because he went so hard on that on the recording of that it like just it like permanently damaged.
That's very, very common. Chords.
Yeah,
there is a vocal coach. Her name is Melissa Cross. She's been around since probably the early 90s teaching professionally. And she has a DVD that I bought, and it's all about how to do screaming sustainably. I need to get through that thing. I watched like almost half the video, and it was all didn't even start screaming yet. It was just eating and singing and warm ups and just like fun little techniques and tricks. So it's hard for me to recommend it because I haven't finished it yet, but I mean, her catalog is insane. Like, I'm wearing a Deftones hoodie right now. He's like one of the big.
I'm biggest, you're in the right place. If I had known that you were going to wear that, I would have worn my Deftones shirt.
No. But I mean, honestly, Corey Taylor probably went to her too. We need more people like her teaching harsh vocals. Because it's very dangerous. Are you familiar with the band Piano's Become the Teeth?
I am, yeah. I haven't listened to them that much, but I know the name really well.
So the first two records were like screamo, like blisteringly fast and like gut-wrenching vocals. And I believe the vocalist like had to get surgery and is now like is not allowed to scream for health reasons. And they transitioned beautifully into an entire record without like going from only harsh vocals to only clean vocals. That is very difficult to do as a band. Like, you have to redefine yourselves. They crushed it. That's a success story, but still, like, I can't even imagine being like, oh, I can't do the thing that is one of the most cathartic experiences of my entire life. Ever again.
It feels good to scream.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I think that's one of the reasons why people go to like heavy, loud music.
Oh, absolutely.
Is because we're people, like we have emotions, and some of those emotions are veer to more aggressive. And like we have frustration, we have anger, we have sadness that like we don't know how to manifest in any other way than like aggression. And these kinds of music are important because they provide hopefully a healthy outlet for that.
I agree entirely, not even just as a band member but as a audience member as well. Just like screaming along and stuff, it's a really unique experience. It's really cool.
One of my favorite bands is Def Heaven, speaking of a band intentionally mixes shoegaze with black metal.
I've seen them.
And I've seen them like 5 times now.
Cool.
It's like always the most cathartic show I'll go to that year. I still have no idea what that guy is fucking saying.
Oh yeah.
I'll look up the lyrics and listen to, and I'll be like, what?
Like, you're what?
That's yeah. What I'm like, all right. If you say so, man.
That's typically how it goes for me too. I usually hear rhythms first, then melody and like sound design, and like lyrics are like one of the last things I can even like begin to process. Some of my favorite songs, I have no idea what they're saying or what the songs are about even at all. And still they'll like make me cry or like make me like you know, start doing spin kicks in my bedroom or whatever.
Hell yeah.
Not even knowing what they're talking about or anything at all. And I think that's interesting. Just like the voice and like the instruments alone, they're enough to like really drive a person to feel such strong things.
Yeah. Wicked.
Yeah, it's cool. And you don't need a scream to do that, obviously. It's like Radiohead's my favorite band. I don't think they've ever
screamed. Hell yeah.
Maybe once.
He screams on... there's a track on the second half of OK Computer where he screams. Climbing Up the Walls.
Really?
He screams. He's not like doing scream vocals, but in like in the climax of the song, when it hits like a grand cacophony, like he does... like it's not super loud because it gets like kind of buried in the overall mix, but like I'm pretty sure he's
Tom York needs to start a screamo band. So that'd be awesome. But there's sure a, could do whatever. I think on one of their kind of like B-sides like records, there's an extended like dub version of Climbing Up the Walls. It is so good. If you're not familiar with that one,
I've probably heard it. So when I was back in my torrenting days of like college, I downloaded like a 700 song Radiohead collection that was like every like B-side and outtake and rarity and like a bunch of live versions and a bunch of the like their like the times they've covered like songs by other artists,
all the deep cuts.
So I probably have heard that because it included like alternate versions, but
yeah, this one's even on Spotify and whatnot. It's
That
deep of a cut. That's if you're going to go into, you know, torrenting discographies level of deep cuts.
Yeah. I mean, this one had like performances of like Tom York doing like After the Gold Rush, like the Neil Young song.
Cool.
Yeah, and I was like, I had no idea that he did this. They did like a, it's either like John Peel or like BBC sessions. So like a live performance, but like in a studio.
Yeah, from the basement.
Yeah, they cover like it's the Carly Simon James Bond song. So like James Bond theme song that Carly Simon does. Nobody Does It Better is the title. It's so sick.
That's the name of a James Bond movie?
It's the name of the song. It's For the Spy Who Loved Me. But
I always thought the name of the song was also the name of the movie. Maybe not.
There's a couple James Bond songs that are the song has a different title in the movie. She does say the title of the movie in the song though.
Got it.
Anyway, Radiohead cover that. Radiohead also have that song that was gonna be the James Bond.
That's
really
banger.
Good. And that, but then like the movie studio was like, yeah, it's too dark. We can't go with that.
And why'd you pick Radiohead? That's funny.
It's way better than the song that they ended up going with for that movie.
Yeah, I'm sure.
All right. Anyway, I think I have to wrap up. I haven't had dinner yet.
Same.
Yeah.
I'm in the same boat.
So, yeah. Let's eat. This was awesome.
Seriously. Yeah. It was great catching up.
I know. Every time you've invited me to a show, I have had something else going on.
Please
keep
Saturdays.
Inviting me. Okay. To shows.
Yeah, and, yeah.
I will get there.
That'd be awesome. Would love to see it.
Would love to see you guys live. Anyway,
it'll happen.
Go check out Fracture Type on whatever streaming service you use. Listen to their new EP, Make Your Brain a Better Place to Live.
Thanks, man. Appreciate the shout.
Yeah, totally. All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Have a good one.
Yeah, you too, Kevin.
Peace out.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. That was my interview with Kevin Grady from Fracture Type. I'm looking forward to Nice A Fest later this summer, as well as probably some other festivals, hopefully. Boston Calling was a blast. Thank you to Ethan for all the audio, all the post-production work he does on the audio. Thanks for you, the listener. And until next time, I'm Harry. Bye.